Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show. Hello, everyone. You are listening to the Employee Cycle Podcast, and this is your host, Bruce Marable, for this episode. Today, I will be interviewing the amazing Bethany Perkins from Delphic Digital, a digital marketing firm that lives at the convergence of marketing and technology, creating magnetic digital experiences that advance the brand, voice, and mission of clients. That sounds awesome. Did I get that right?
You did. Thanks for the great intro.
All right. Let's give a huge welcome to Beth. Thanks for coming, Beth.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Great. So, before we begin, I have a very important question for you.
Okay.
Did you watch the eclipse yesterday?
I attempted to watch the eclipse. Unfortunately, my view was completely obscured by a giant cloud, so I didn't really get to see anything. What about you?
I did not.
No?
No, I didn't really care that much. Forgive me. I should have. but I didn't. I had way too much work to do.
I'll be another one in 7 years.
There we go. Yeah. And if we're all lucky enough to be alive by then I'll catch it then. All right. Well, after that very important question, so let's get started by giving the listeners a little bit about yourself. So how did you get into the wonderful world of HR?
Completely by accident. I think a lot of people who are in HR now have maybe not a similar story, but a series of happy accidents that kind of get you here. So I actually started my career in theater. I got a BFA in theater production and design, and then directed and produced new theater in New York and Austin for about 10 years. And as I got into my late 20s, started to feel like I wanted something a little bit more stable that might bring in some positive cash flow once in a while.
positive cash flow is important.
So I started kind of poking around to see, you know, what types of jobs I might be qualified for, that someone might want to hire me for, that I would enjoy doing. And I ended up interviewing with a really cool new startup in Austin, Texas called Software Advice, back when they were about 20, 25 people. And the CEO, bless him, decided to take a huge risk and hired me to be their one of their first recruiters. And I really got thrown into the deep end from there. I reported directly to the CEO, so I didn't have a lot of day-to-day guidance. And I had to learn on the fly and figure it out, and I did. It was sort of a sink or swim situation, and I was able to swim. And I've been progressing in that field ever since. So now I'm, in addition to still doing some talent attraction and engagement stuff and recruiting, I also focus a lot on internal processes and programs, employee retention, company culture, events. So it's a good balance.
Awesome. Now, I do have to ask you a question. You were in Austin, and you were in the digital tech startup space, and then you're in a similar space in Philly. Can you just give the listeners a little bit of context around how you saw the differences between working in Austin and now working in Philly?
It's interesting. Philly actually feels like a much more close-knit, inclusive tech community. Austin is kind of feeling a little bit more like a mini Silicon Valley, and there's a lot going on there. There's a lot of competition. There's just a lot of noise. Whereas in Philly, I think the industry isn't maybe as big or as saturated as it is. It's more like Austin. But the people who are in it are all super supportive of each other and really find ways to connect and help each other and share knowledge. And that was something that I didn't really see a ton of in the Austin space. So it's been exciting to be in Philly and really integrate myself into this awesome community.
Perfect. That wasn't a question that I had listed originally, but I had to ask because people are always comparing Philly to New York or DC or the Valley. So to get an original perspective from Austin, that's great. So I have a really interesting question. At Delphic Digital, your title is people person, correct?
Well, no, that's not my official title, but it's probably the best title to describe what I actually do. Right now, my official title is Talent Acquisition Manager, which only really reflects a small part of what I do, but my boss and I both aren't really that into titles, so we just haven't gotten around to changing it to something else.
Ah. So I think my question still holds, and that is, why do you think the word people is popping up in HR titles such as Director of People Operations or Chief People Officer versus sticking with the traditional word human in human resources? Is this a fad? Is this HR trying to be cool and hip? Or is this HR trying to reinvent itself?
I think it's a little bit of HR trying to reinvent itself. And I think that it's less the human part of human resources that was problematic, and it's the resources part. You know, the people in your company don't want to be viewed as similar to that table or that computer. You know, those are resources. Humans are humans. They're people. They're different. They're dynamic. They're not replaceable. You know, if my computer breaks, we will just buy another of the exact same computer and I will be able to do all the same things. But if someone leaves the company, we can hire someone with similar skills and maybe a similar personality, but they're never going to be the exact same thing. And I think acknowledging that and the impact that the people have on your business and your revenue and your customers and everything that you do is really important. I think it also helps to maybe waylay some of the stigma that comes with an HR title. It's funny, I actually sometimes on Slack will just realize that I haven't talked to this person in a while, and so I'll shoot them a Slack message and say, hey, you want to grab lunch next week? And they're like, why? What is this about? It's fine. I'm like, I'm just a person and you're a person. We both eat lunch anyways. I thought maybe we could do that together. But it's hard. I think people assume that when HR wants to talk to you that something bad has happened, and kind of reframing how people think about what people in my seat are doing for the organization and for the people, I think is a positive change.
That is great to hear. And I actually have a question related to that a little later in the interview. So I'll make sure I'll come back to that. But now that I've messed up your title and so it shows the amount of research I have done. Now that I've messed up your title and now we have your actual title, what does that job entail? What are your current top HR goals? And how are you using tech and or data to achieve them?
So, my title, like I said, doesn't really encompass everything that I do because it's very focused on the recruiting part, but I do so much internal people operations stuff as well. So to me, the title's sort of meaningless. I just want to do interesting work that has an impact. I think this year, a few of the things that I've really been thinking about a lot is retention and thinking about what that should mean, because it's not as simple as make sure people don't leave, because it's good for people to leave sometimes. Sometimes it's good for them. Sometimes it's good for the organization. Sometimes it's a magical combination where it's good for everyone involved. And so it's not a world where no one leaves, but it is a world where people are leaving for the right reasons. So not leaving because they can't get along with their manager, and not leaving because they don't have any career growth or they're underpaid or they're unhappy. Like, those are bad reasons to leave, and those are the things that I think about. Great reasons to leave are I got offered a totally different kind of job in a new organization, and I want to go try out this new crazy path. That's awesome, and I'm really excited for you, and I want you to go be super successful. Another good reason to leave is, like, I'm moving across the country because my husband's going to graduate school, which is actually what brought me to Philly. So there's good reasons to leave, and I'm trying to focus on creating a kind of a culture where if there's the not-so-good reasons going on, that we can talk about it before it gets to a point where somebody wants to leave and look for solutions that transition things in a positive way, whether it's a new role within the organization or helping them find their next opportunity somewhere else. So that's been a big thing on my mind for this year. And I'm also thinking a lot about diversity and inclusion. I know that's sort of a hot button topic across the board, but I like thinking about it a little bit outside of the box and outside of just gender and race and socioeconomic background, which are all really important types of diversity. But I'm also having conversations with hiring managers around kinds of diversity like introvert versus extrovert, and how bringing an introvert onto your extroverted team could provide some really interesting diversity on that team. And to think about diversity in all of these different ways. So we're not just saying, well, we want to hire a woman for this tech role, which is cool. Like, I'm very into women in tech, but I'm also into, let's hire the best person for the role and just make sure that we're thinking through our own biases and being aware of those as we move through hiring decisions.
Wow, that was a lot. So in regards to those goals and things that you're thinking about, how are you currently using technology and or data to help achieve those goals or to make it happen?
Yeah, so one thing we do on the retention side is we do a monthly ENPS score, so the Employee Net Promoter Score. We send out a survey every 30 days to our entire team just saying, how likely are you to recommend Delphic as a place to work on a scale of 1 to 10? It's anonymous. There's an optional text box if they have supporting comments that they want to include. And it's something that takes literally 2 seconds to complete. And it's a really great way for us to just continue to take a pulse check month over month to see how our team is doing, how they're feeling. And I've started to now look at laying those results over other data points within the business. For instance, like utilization rates as they compare to ENPS scores, and starting to see, are there trends there? Like, if utilization is really, really high, does that impact our ENPS? If revenue is really low, how does that impact our ENPS? How does, like, how many open roles we have at any given time impact the ENPS? So then I can start to push the right levers to drive employee satisfaction in the long term.
So I'm familiar with how NPS is measuring customer satisfaction from a customer side. But can you explain what NPS means on the HR side and then how HR has turned NPS into ENPS, just for the people who are listening who don't understand that term or have never heard it before?
Yeah, so Net Promoter Score is started as a way for businesses to measure customer satisfaction with the idea that if you as a customer say, I'm on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm a 10 when it comes to recommending this product to a friend, that means that you really like the product. If you're only a 6, meh, you're okay on the product. There's probably not any big problems. If you're a 2, there's something really wrong with your experience with that product, and we want to figure out how we can fix that issue. So it really is about regular measurement and then slow incremental change. So you're not going to run one NPS, whether it's for a product or for employee engagement. You're not going to run it once, make big changes, and call it a day. It really is something that you kind of want to look at over time and look for those slow changes and just keep an eye on it, because lots of different things can impact how the score raises and falls, but essentially it's a really useful tool to measure satisfaction. And I mean, you could probably use it outside of products and employee satisfaction too. But it's a really simple and easy to use measurement that I think customers and employees, you don't have to explain to them how it works. They just understand what a scale of 1 to 10 means, and they can put their own thoughts and feelings onto that scale and give you some really interesting data.
Perfect. Thanks for that explanation. So we're both previous speakers at Disrupt HR here in Philadelphia. By the way, you did a great job, and everyone should check it out. We'll put a link to your video in our show notes. But during your presentation titled Building Company Culture with Intention, you said, company culture is this set of beliefs and behaviors that define your organization, and that you could pick what they are. Could you explain that?
Yeah. So I think, a lot of early stage startups do this or are in the process of doing this, where you want to kind of identify your company values and your mission, and everything is new. So you don't have this yet, but it's at that point, if you're just starting out, it's a perfect time to start thinking about the why behind the work. You know, why do you all show up every day? Or why don't you? Why do you have a fully distributed team? You know, why are you making these decisions for your business? Why is this the product you're building? Why are these your customers? Because understanding the why behind all of these bigger decisions helps employees to really buy in to what you're building, and for everyone to be speaking the same language and be on the same page about it. It also provides clarity where if someone doesn't align with what you believe in and kind of your why, they can self-select out of the process, you know, even during the interview process. And then I think, you know, for older organizations or, you know, organizations that have been around for a little while, just because you set your values and your mission and wrote it all down 20 years ago, make sure that stuff still resonates with you and make sure that it still is a reflection of what's actually going on in your organization. You know, if you say that, for instance, transparency is really important to your organization, well, when was the last time you talked about financials at an all-hands meeting? Or, you know, like, how are you bringing transparency into the day-to-day of the organization? And if you're not, it's not a bad thing. Not every organization needs to be transparent. But if you're not living your values, you might want to think about re-identifying some values that do resonate with you that you are living. And that's really the basis of your culture.
So I'm intrigued that you believe different companies can pick what that culture is, what that culture will become to be. Whereas it seems as though a lot of people believe that culture is the inherent characteristics and combined personality of all the people working there. So I guess I'm a little, not necessarily confused, but interested in why do you believe that companies can actually pick what that is, whereas a lot of other people have an opposing view and they believe that you pick by the people that you hire.
Well, I think it is. It's sort of the same thing. It's just as you get toward hiring, you want to make sure you understand what you're hiring for. And it's not just a list of skills. I think it's really important if you want to have a carefully crafted and intentional culture to hire people who are going to contribute to that culture. So I also hate the term culture fit. Raises the hairs on my arm. And it's mostly because it makes me really nervous that people are hiring for friendship, for let's have a beer together, and not thinking about the right ways that people can contribute to culture. And I mean, it's important to have friends at work and to go have beers and to have team building. That's all really, really critical. I'm not downplaying that. But it's not critical that I want to have a beer with every single person at Delphic Digital. That's actually sort of unsustainable as we grow.
Got it.
What I want to make sure is that we're hiring people who are going to make a positive contribution to our culture. And that might not be through hanging out after work with beer. That might be through organizing a volunteer event or bringing in a new process that increases efficiency or, you know, because they believe in the same things that we believe in and they share our why, they're able to make really positive contributions to the overall culture because they're already in alignment with what we believe. Whereas if you just hire somebody that you like and feel comfortable with and want to have a beer with, they might not have much more to contribute to your culture than that. And that only resonates with you, not necessarily every other person in the company.
That makes a lot of sense. And you actually set me up for the next question. So I know this will be a passionate answer because you already said that it makes the hair on your arm stand up. So I also wanted to know, sticking with the theme of culture, do you see a difference between culture fit versus culture ad? And is one better than the other?
Yeah.
And we already got the answer from you already, but I would like for you to dig in.
I think culture ad is always better. I think it's better for diversity and inclusion. Because again, if you're just looking for culture fit, the temptation is to hire a bunch of people who are like you. And that might not play out in terms of gender or race or age, but it might, and it probably will in some of those areas. But if you're always thinking about culture ad or cultural contribution, you're then sort of looking for something a little bit different. You know, you're looking for somebody who might bring in new ideas or shake things up a little bit. And those are really valuable things to have on a team.
So then to also talk about the opposing view of the cliche, make sure you hire someone that you would be comfortable being stuck in an airport with, or someone you would want to take a plane ride with and sit next to them and have a conversation, or someone that you would want to be stuck in an elevator with. Do you think that's just totally wrong and definitely the wrong way to look at this? Or do you think there's some truth with that?
I understand what people mean when they say that, but for me, I don't even want to talk to my husband on an airplane for 4 hours, like, let alone a priest. I like have quiet time, wow. Honestly.
Okay. Well.
I hope my husband knows.
Beth, there's no talking. We don't talk on plane.
No, I mean, I guess he and I connect on, we neither of us like to talk to each other on airplanes. We like our podcasts or our music and our books, and we like to have that quiet time. And so, no, I would never hire anyone because I want to spend time with them in an airport, because I wish that there was no one else in the airport when I was there. I wish I had a private airport. But I do understand why people bring that up. And I think that the spirit of it isn't wrong. But I do think that there's value in bringing somebody on the team that challenges you in a way that you might not want to sit with them for 4 hours, because not all of us have the personality to want to chat with somebody for 4 hours. I don't really. And not all of us, and like, I don't think that that's an important qualifier for success on a team. I think that, you know, you want to bring people who are different than you and have different ideas, and you might never see eye to eye with somebody on your team. As long as you can do so respectfully, I think there's a lot of value in that, that little bit of conflict.
Great. Now, because you're so passionate about culture, I do have a list of questions that I wanted to ask. So the first one, and it's back to your presentation at Disrupt HR, you also said it's best to craft your company cultures or your company values by committee. What does that mean?
So I think in order for company values to be really meaningful to the whole company, it's usually best if it's not just the CEO, like, sitting alone in a room saying, these are our values. Because, I don't know, I think that different viewpoints, and there's people who see the organization in a different way, and A, crafting values alone is just a really difficult exercise. It's going to take you a lot longer, I think, than it would if you asked a few people to join in. And you get some really interesting alternative viewpoints on what we think our values actually are, which is actually an exercise that I'm in the middle of at Delphic right now, where I've nominated some senior people from different departments to spend the next month just sort of having that question in the back of their mind, like, what are our values actually? Like, I know what's written on the wall, I know what's on the website. What am I seeing in the day-to-day? Good, bad, ugly, all of it. And we're going to come back together in a month and we're going to report back on what we've seen in terms of how people move through the space and how they interact with each other and what meetings are like and all of these different things, and start to describe them and bucket those into different categories and start to see what our actual values on a day-to-day, like, what are we living and how does that compare to what we say our values are, and are there changes that need to be made?
How do you measure culture? And should it be measured in the first place?
It's so squishy. It's really hard to measure. I think that there's a lot of data points that are decent indicators of cultural health. But there is yet, at least from my experience, I've yet to find one really good metric that measures culture. So, I mean, you obviously want to measure things like, you know, your attrition rate, you want to measure things like your ENPS, all these things are really important. I mean, you want to do regular engagement surveys at least once a year, if not more. And those are all important things to keep an eye on. As in aggregate, they really speak to the health of the culture, but I don't know of any one thing that can accurately measure culture and what that would possibly be. Why? Do you have an idea?
I don't, which is why I interview people like you to come on and give amazing answers for the listeners.
Well, if you find somebody who has an idea on how to measure culture, I'd be really interested to hear where their head's at with that, because I think it's a neat idea. I just don't know if it's possible.
I think there's a combination. It seems as though the industry is moving to measuring culture through a combination of other metrics. So employee engagement, which in essence is eNPS, performance, but it is more art than science to me. And it seems that it is very difficult for you to be able to measure something. So like you said, squishy.
Yeah.
But last question about culture. You recently posted an article on LinkedIn titled, "What Returning Your Shopping Cart Says About You." And I was bursting out laughing when I saw your comment, because I always try to return my shopping cart when I'm at the supermarket, although I hate the supermarket and hate going to the supermarket, but that's a whole other thing. It's not about me. And when you posted this article, you wrote, "This is a topic I'm super passionate about. So I am dying to know, why are you so passionate about returning your shopping cart? And what does this say about a person?"
So I have this sort of life theory, which I just ask myself throughout the day, what would happen if everyone did the thing that I'm about to do? So when it comes to not returning your shopping cart, if everyone decided not to return their shopping cart, you wouldn't be able to use the parking lot anymore, and that would be bad.
That is true.
I don't want to contribute to that kind of world, so I return not only my own shopping carts, but often the shopping carts of others. I'm also a big fan of rules. Surprise, HR lady. and they're there to be followed. And it applies so broadly, like, in the kitchen at work with dishes, it's really easy to just be like, oh, it's no big deal, I'll leave my mug in the sink. But what would happen if everyone did that? It would not be good. Clean your mug. And so it's a question I ask myself all the time. I encourage others to ask themselves the same question as they go about their lives. And it's a pretty good compass on, you know, what to do and what not to do.
You heard it, folks. The next time you're at the supermarket and you're thinking about not returning your shopping cart, just think WWBD. What would Beth do? And if you don't return it, you know that Beth will come and hunt you down, bring you back to the supermarket, and watch you return your cart. I'm just saying.
It's not entirely unlikely, to be frank. I'm a bit of a parking lot vigilante at times.
Sorry to interrupt your podcast, but I have some questions for my HR leaders listening. Are you currently drowning in spreadsheets or having to log into too many different systems for all your workforce data? Are you spending way too much time creating HR reports with no time left to actually analyze the data? Are you tired of being the only executive without a dashboard to share with the leadership team? If this sounds like you, then check out EmployeeCycle, the HR metrics dashboard built to solve this problem. EmployeeCycle brings all your workforce data together into a user-friendly dashboard by connecting to all your HR systems and spreadsheets. Sign up for access to the beta now at EmployeeCycle.com and learn how to get your HR source of truth. Again, that's EmployeeCycle.com. Now back to the amazing podcast episode.
Okay, so just switching gears a little bit. This is a question that I believe a lot of HR departments not only struggle with, but think about all the time. So I would like for you to share with our listeners, how do you show the ROI of your HR department, and how do you currently communicate that value to your leadership team?
So there's a couple different layers to this, because I feel like in HR, there's the metric side of things, the stuff that is measurable. You can see trends, you can track results. And we, within the last year, built our own little homegrown dashboard in Google Drive, where we can track some of our key metrics. And it's a great way for the two owners of the company to be able to log in and just see kind of a snapshot of where we are, what the trends are, how we're doing against yearly goals. The other side of HR is the squishy side that's much harder to measure in a really tangible way, but it's still important to keep an eye on. And that, I feel, is a little bit more just sort of anecdotal feedback, where, you know, I have a one-on-one with my boss once a week, and I share just kind of like what I'm hearing, what challenges I'm seeing people in the company facing, any like little wins that we had. You know, I really try to keep him appraised while respecting confidentiality with my people, to let leadership know kind of some of the squishier ways that I'm making an impact.
Great. Now, I said I would come back to this question earlier when you were discussing hot topics such as diversity. But with all mm-hmm. of the national buzz around serious topics such as sexual harassment, gender pay disparity, and the lack of diversity, how does this currently affect the job of HR? Does it make it harder? Does it make it more sensitive? Similar to when you said you just want to grab coffee with someone and all of a sudden they're like, oh no, wait, am I getting fired? What did I do? No, No. When I said that to her, I was only joking. How does this affect your job and everyone else who is in HR?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm really fortunate here at Delphic in that we have a very respectful and diverse group of people. And so fostering a positive environment in the workplace hasn't really been that much of a challenge, although I know that there's a ton of companies where it's a big challenge. I think I'm a little bit lucky in my day-to-day, but it's still something I think about, especially when it comes to growing the team and making sure, you know, I've really this year started to have a lot of dialogue with managers and people who are involved in the interview process about biases and forcing them to admit that they have them. I have them, Bruce, you have them, like everyone is biased and it's not productive to say that you're not. What is productive is to start to identify where your biases lie and what sort of triggers them and how you respond. And you can course correct in that moment. Like if you find yourself in an interview saying in the back of your head, like, oh, this person can't do this job because, you know, they don't have a bachelor's degree. That's not necessarily true. And that's a really common bias that I see is bias against people who don't have a formal education. And trying to re-educate them on, you know, that person doesn't necessarily not have the education that you have because they were lazy or stupid. They were not afforded the same like level of privilege that you were in your life. And it wasn't an option for them. But the fact that they've gotten to a point where they're now interviewing for software developer jobs without a bachelor's degree is pretty impressive. And I think that you should take that into account because that is grit. That's a lot of qualities that we do want to see. And having those conversations, while it is a very grassroots effort, you know, it's not something where you can just send out a memo and say, by the way, you guys are all biased, be aware of it. You really have to have these conversations at the grassroots level, one-on-one, as time goes on, to really just kind of reframe the way people are thinking about how they interact with candidates and with their coworkers. And once you start thinking about your biases, I promise you won't ever be able to not notice them in your day-to-day.
I love the way you're bringing that level of transparency to the workplace, especially making people open and self-aware about their biases. If you ever are looking to take that skill and put it into somewhere else, I think we might need your help in politics. So, because there's a lot of bias right now in the country, but that's a whole other thing. So, I saw your company made a very funny and interesting video on YouTube where you had employees state their college major and then you actually mm-hmm. showed their current job, which typically didn't match for majority of those employees. Do you think the days of hiring based on majors are gone? And if so, what's the best way to hire for the best employee company fit now?
Yeah, I mean, if I ran the world, yeah, the days of hiring for college majors are totally gone. I realize that I do not run the world quite yet.
But you're getting there.
Not yet.
But you're getting there. You're very close.
I mean, I feel like I have a BFA in theater. Like people look at my, you know, if you just look at my resume from the first 10 years of my career, you would never guess that I ended up in HR and you would never be able to assume how that happened. So I see a lot of value in having these different experiences and I honestly, almost every day, see ways that my education in theater is influencing how I approach things in human resources. And so I think it's really valuable to have someone who studied French, who now is like a software engineer. That's really cool. How does a language-driven person think about coding differently than an engineering-type person? To me, I think that's a really interesting addition to the team. if they have the actual coding skills that we're looking for. I'm all about crazy backgrounds and career changers, and I think I'm a little bit more into it because I am one. And I've noticed, though, when I get new job descriptions from hiring managers and the qualifications, it almost always is like bachelor's degree in this very specific thing. And I just delete the entire education line before I post it. Shh, don't tell anybody. But I do, because I don't want somebody who doesn't have that very specific educational requirement to be discouraged from applying to a role that they might otherwise be great at. And so I usually just take that out entirely to remove it from the equation in the initial conversation.
Nice. What department do you think HR can learn from the most? And what department do you think needs to work even closer with HR than they currently are?
So,
and this can be for specifically,
This is fairly personal. I think I could learn the most from finance, because coming from a background in the arts, finance is the area that I have absolutely the least experience in. And I think that that's kind of next on my big career bucket list, is to learn a lot more about the finance side of how a business is run and how to manage a P&L. And it's just stuff I've never really had to do in my career, but I want to understand it better because that's what drives business decisions. And understanding the finance piece, if I can then interject the people piece into that, I think that I can be really impactful to a business. I think in terms of what department should work with HR more, and this is not true at Delphic because we work together so, so closely, but I think a lot of times the marketing team is too far away from human resources, and especially from the talent side of HR. So like recruiting and talent branding, it's so intertwined with what your Marcom team is doing, from social media to events, sponsorships, partnerships. There's so much overlap and there's so many opportunities to create much more interesting ideas together than any of you ever would alone. I've been working really closely with our Marcom person for the last year since she joined the company, and she's one of my favorite people to partner with. She's an awesome addition to the team, and we come up with really cool ideas together.
Couldn't have said it better. And even us here at Employee Cycle, we believe that marketing has set the blueprint of how they manage the life cycle of a customer for HR to manage the life cycle of an employee, because on both sides of the table, it's a very similar life cycle. The next question I always like to ask, I think it's very interesting. The saying "see the table" when it comes to HR, is it a tired HR saying, or is this still something relevant to the job function?
I mean, I've been fortunate in that I've always had a seat at the table, mostly because I've spent the majority of my career in very small companies. So it was just it was a small table. I got to sit at it.
Right.
But I think had I shied away from that, or had I doubted my worthiness to be at that table or whatever it was, that I might not have ever sat down. I'm a fairly brazen person. So if I see a table I want to sit at, I just walk up to it. I'm like, hey guys, I'm going to sit in the seat now. Cool. Great. And we go from there. I've yet to be kicked out of a table.
That's good.
But yeah, I mean, I think that if you're waiting for somebody to invite you to the table, the invite might never come, especially in a larger organization or a more kind of traditional organization where HR is viewed a little less strategically and a little bit more as sort of the compliance paper pushing people. But if you want to be a strategic business partner, start being a strategic business partner. You know, offer your recommendations, offer another viewpoint, accept that they're not always going to take your recommendation, and don't get your feelings hurt about it, but be there. Do the job you want to have, and it's amazing how quickly that job will come to you.
HR analytics, workforce analytics, people analytics. What's the difference? Do any of those terms mean anything differently to you? And do you believe that they're being currently overhyped?
They all sort of mean the same thing to me. Honestly, I don't think they're overhyped. I think that they're really important. And I think that there was a really long, like, there's still, even though we feel like we've been hearing about them for the last 10 years, and we have, we weren't really hearing about them before that. So this is still a fairly new idea. And, you know, bringing analytics into the people space is, I mean, it's fairly new. It's only been going on for, you know, the last decade or so across most organizations. So yeah, I think it's something we should continue to talk about and continue to figure out what it can be and how it's going to evolve as organizations continue to evolve.
Great. Now, this is the section I like to call questions from the field, where I ask you a few questions from other HR professionals, preferably from those who know you. So here are some questions from Kelly Paulson, the current VP of Coaching and Development at advertising firm Allen & Gerritsen. She wanted me to ask you, Beth, unlimited vacation, friend or foe to HR in the business?
It's a little bit of both. So it's definitely a friend from a recruiting perspective. And I think, you know, if you have an organization that's built on trust and you really hire people that you feel like you can trust to think like owners and get the work done and do the right things for the business, it shouldn't present too many problems. I think it's harder in organizations that skew a little bit younger. People who haven't, maybe this is their first job and don't have a lot of experience with managing their time in a professional environment at all, let alone when you sort of take the training wheels off. So for me, that's really been about coaching managers and making sure that leadership and management understands what it is to have an unlimited policy. So right now, a little history, we offer unlimited PTO for everyone who's been with the company for 5 years or longer. We started that last year as a pilot with the idea that if that goes well, we want to expand it in the future. So far, it's been going really well. But it really is about teaching the managers how to manage it with their people. And that sometimes the answer has to be no. And you have to be able to have that tough conversation with somebody on your team and teach them how to better manage their unlimited. And it really is just kind of an ongoing education for everybody. But overall, I think the pros far outweigh the cons. And with the pilot program we've been running, it's been going really, really well so far.
That's awesome. Second question from Kelly. Working with people is an exhausting job. How do you keep yourself organized and motivated on the regular? Are there any tips for the rest of us out here that are trying to be the best HR professionals possible?
Yeah, so I actually have like a modified bullet journal situation that I've adopted for myself. We have a little like women in technology group here at Delphic when we have our women's Slack channel and we share tips and ideas and we've done lunch and learns. And one of the girls on the development team is an avid bullet journaler, which I was only sort of familiar with but had never done. And she led a session for all the women at Delphic on how to build and maintain your own bullet journal, which is just a really cool sort of analog organizational system that uses a notebook and very pretty pens. And it makes writing down your to-dos like really fun and exciting. So I took that and ended up modifying it a little bit. And now that's sort of how I track what's going on at work. So I have my notebook that I literally, like, I don't leave it on my desk. It's always with me because you never know when somebody's going to grab you on the hallway and say, "Hey, Beth, can we chat?" So I always have it with me. I write down notes as I go. And then at the end of the day, I sort of go through all of my notes and I transition them to action items for the next day. So anything that's not an action item that I don't really need to keep can just stay. But then I start to move points and organize them into like, here's the 5 things that I just need to check off before I have my coffee in the morning. Here's what I'm going to work on after lunch. Here's this project's going to take, you know, 4 days. So I'm going to kind of put it on my agenda for the next 4 days and trying to take all of those notes and make sense of them before I leave the office. So then when I come in the morning, I have a very nice, clean, pretty page of what's happening today. which will inevitably just get written all over with arrows and crossouts and all of that. But I'll start again fresh tomorrow.
Nice. Well, thanks for answering those, and I'm sure Kelly really appreciated that. So what's your favorite place to get HR news, info? Is it your peers, blogs, trade pubs? What are you reading? Where are you getting info, insight from?
Yeah, that's a really good one. So I have been a big fan of Buffer's Culture Lab podcast since they launched it last year. I don't know if you're familiar, but it's a great podcast, and they talk all about the crazy culture experiments that they've done within both Buffer, from having a fully remote workforce to an experiment they did last year where they just removed all the organizational structure and was like, nobody has a manager now. Do the work that feels good to you. And just saw what happened when everyone only did work that felt good to them. Surprised, the engineers loved it. The client services people were frustrated as well. So, but they talk through all these, you know, you read a lot about, you know, these sort of like radical ideas in people operations. Buffer's a company that's out there sort of doing them and then reporting back on what happened, which is really fascinating. So that's a great one that I highly recommend.
Very cool. And then we'll definitely include that in the show notes. So we now have another very fun section with some lightning questions. And I like to call this the real, the random, and the ridiculous. So our first question is, I'm a bread pudding connoisseur. And so I want to know, do you like bread pudding? And if so, how do you like it made?
I love bread pudding. It's pretty rare that I eat it because my husband does not like it. So I don't really make it at home.
Oh, man, you might have to rethink marriage. You may have to rethink that.
I know.
Right? It's amazing. But anyway, go ahead.
As long as it doesn't have raisins in it, I am good.
Oh, okay. So you're a non-raisin person. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. So for me, I like it with ice cream, sometimes with a little Irish cream, maybe some chocolate syrup, maybe some brioche. I mean, I can go on and on, but I love it. But I just wanted to know if you like it. Okay. So whenever we meet up and we grab bread pudding, I'll make sure that we'll go to a place where they don't have raisins. Got it.
Yes, please.
So I know you're a very busy HR person, and you might not have time for anything outside of HR, but if you binge-watched the TV show lately, what was the last show that you binge-watched?
I actually just did. So I had a head cold all weekend, which you might still be able to hear a little bit in my voice, and my husband was out of town. So that was a great combination because I just got to be on the couch alone. No one bothered me, wallowing in my head cold.
So a reason to stay home and a reason to stay home by yourself.
Totally. I watched a new show on Netflix called Atypical about a high school student who is on the spectrum and is just now starting to date. And it was so good. Highly recommend watching Atypical. Like, great acting, great writing. It's both funny and heartbreaking. It was wonderful.
Nice. And self-care. How do you do it?
Well, I mean, I have a box of wine at my house at any given time.
Okay. That sounds awesome.
Good morning. I work out. I exercise pretty regularly. I make a point to get out and, like, go to events that energize me, whether they're industry events or concerts or festival, whatever it is, just stuff that I know that's going to energize me and make me happy. I try to do something like that at least once a week. And connecting for happy hour with friends, both industry friends to talk shop and share horror stories and pick each other's brains. And also going out with people who know nothing about HR and don't want to talk about it is also great.
No, I definitely hear you. So back to the final HR questions. If you were not working in HR, what would you be doing if you could be doing anything?
So I often joke that my secret backup dream job is being a dolphin trainer.
Wow.
Although I have no background in biology, job to be a dolphin trainer. I had a friend in Austin who was a dolphin trainer for the U.S. Navy, which seems
that sounds
next
pretty
level
intense.
Cool job. Yeah. So that would be a cool job. But realistically, if I wasn't doing this, I would probably try to find my way. And I may still at some point, you know, my sort of my pre-retirement plan at some point is I'd love to find my way back into the arts in some way, shape, or form, whether it's taking what I've learned in human resources and applying it for a nonprofit or an arts organization later in my career, or doing a complete 180 and just going back and directing theater and being a starving artist again, or maybe teaching. But yeah, I would love later on in life to get back into the arts.
And then one more question. Best and worst part of working in HR?
Oh, it's easy and it's the same. People are the best part and people are the worst part.
I should have seen that coming. I actually just set that up. I thought it was going to be a much longer answer than that. That's great. Well, Beth, this was an amazing, amazing episode. Thank you so much. I had so much fun interviewing you. Where can people find you online? And do you have any current job openings?
Yes, we do have current job openings. We've got a few on our tech team. We're looking for some people to join our marketing team on the paid media side. And there's always new stuff coming up around the corner as the company continues to grow. So you can check out our openings. This is always updated. It's delphicdigital.com/careers. It'll also give you some info about our company culture, benefits, links to our social media, so you can kind of stay in touch those ways. And if you want to follow me, I'm at Pogo Glamcore, PogoGlamcore, on Twitter and Instagram.
And we'll also include that in the show notes as well. Beth, thank you so much. Woo! Round of applause again. So thanks so much for being on the episode. I knew you would be an awesome guest, and you still exceeded my expectations. Well, folks, I hope you were taking notes because you just got a ton of great information. I thank you all for listening, and if you like this episode, please leave us a great review and a 5-star rating on iTunes under Employee Cycle. I hope all of you come back for our next amazing episode, and until next time, continue to attract, retain, and engage the best workforce possible. Later, kids.